The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And is this loud enough today? Okay, great. So I want to begin by reading a passage from an autobiography of a forest monk, the title of the book. It's an autobiography of one of the important meditation masters of 20th century Thailand, Ajahn Tait. And he writes this. It was the novice Tait who became a millionaire. Here I'm talking about the time when the government thought up the idea of creating one new millionaire every year in Thailand. They thus brought out an annual lottery with a first prize of 50 or 60,000 baht. In those days, this was considered a fortune large enough for a Thai millionaire. It was all done so that we Thais would not feel humiliated before other richer countries. One night, it so happened that novice Tait was unable to sleep because he had just won first prize in the lottery. It was time to set about finding the site to build himself a grand and extensive three-story mansion. This residence would be furnished in the most modern designs and be situated in the center of the commercial district. The employees and assistants would have to fill the shelves with every imaginable kind of merchandise. He would be at ease in body and mind, without a worry in the world, and spend his time lounging on a sofa making eyes at the attractive young women who would come in to shop. Whoever chanced to glance in his direction and smiled would receive a happy smile back. Throughout his life of 18 or 19 years, he had never known greater happiness. He had indeed attained the rank of millionaire, just as the government had wished. Yet, then, within the blink of an eye, with all the things still fresh and new, impermanence intrude. Ah, impermanence. All abruptly fades and disappears from his heart, and that's something he regrets so much. Novice Tait comes to his senses, and he realizes that it is already late into the night. It should already be time for sleep. Hey, what's this? Not only has the lottery yet to take place, but I haven't even bought a ticket. How come I've already become a millionaire? I must be going crazy. So not a few people have become great in some way or other, millionaires or famous or something in their fantasy. And the story represents how easy it is for some of us to get caught up in the preoccupations of our minds. Our minds tell stories, and those stories can pull us into their world. And in doing so, we lose touch with the world that we're here with. Yesterday, I was going for a walk up here in the mountains, a hike by myself, and I had a certain concerns that had been kind of a little bit preoccupying me. And I found it kind of interesting and fun to watch how I would get this beautiful natural place I was walking, and I'd get pulled into my concern. And after a little while, I somehow, accidentally maybe, I came out of it, and it felt like I was coming out of the fog, and suddenly I saw that beautiful natural world and the trees and stuff that I was in. And then after a while, the concern would take over, and I would kind of notice that I was lost touch with the world around me. And then it was kind of like I dipped into the water. And then eventually I came out of the water and I looked, oh, there's a world here. And that was kind of fun to watch, just dipping in and out. And mostly we were dipping out. So easy to kind of get caught up in preoccupations and concerns. There are five particular preoccupations that this meditation tradition of ours emphasizes a lot. These are called the five hindrances. And they say that these are the primary preoccupations which hinder our ability to get concentrated, deeply concentrated in meditation, to really show up and be present in our moment-to-moment experience. There are certainly other preoccupations we can have, but somehow the tradition holds these up as being maybe more tenacious, so that as the mind gets starting to get focused or gets settled in meditation, these can easily come up and keep the mind from going deeper into the meditation, gets more settled. They say that they hinder the wisdom of the mind. Usually the advice is when these five preoccupations come up, don't make any important decisions, especially if they're really strong, because we're seeing the world not quite accurately. So they hinder our ability to be wise, and they hinder our ability to get concentrated, and they hinder our ability to see clearly, which for Vipassana practice, that's the aim of the practice, is to be able to see clearly. The analogy that the tradition gives for this lack of inability to see clearly is a pond, which a pond water, which if you put a red dye in the pond, you don't see accurately. You see everything colored red. And so in the same way, if you get caught up in the first hindrance, which is sensual desire, that everything is seen through the lens of sensual desire and it's not seeing it accurately. The second analogy is a pond that is boiling. Maybe, I don't know, it's Yellowstone or something. The water is boiling. And so there also, the water is, anything you see, you can't really see into the water. And in this analogy, and more important, you can't see even your own reflection, because the water is boiling so much. And that's an analogy for having ill will, caught up in ill will, aversion, anger, hostility, thoughts like that. The third analogy is that of the pond is filled with algae and seaweed and stuff. And it's so thick that, again, there's no reflection possible. And you can't see into the pond to see clearly what's going on. And if you try to walk through it, it's just kind of like all difficult and you get entangled. It's slow going. And this is an analogy for lethargy and stupor. The fourth analogy is that of the pond with the wind churning up the water. So it's like waves and all churned up. And again, you cannot see reflections in the churned up water, and because so churned up, you also can't see into the pond. And this is an analogy for a mind that is restless and filled with regrets. And the fifth one is the pond is filled with mud, muddy water. And there again, you cannot see into the pond, and you can't get a reflection from the surface of the pond. And so there's no clear seeing in that situation. And this is an analogy for doubt and indecision. So these are the five. So there's sensual desire, ill will, lethargy and stupor, restlessness and regret, and doubt. Some people say, well, where does anxiety fit in? You know, shouldn't that, some people have, you know, isn't anxiety one of the major hindrances that people have? And my impression is the word anxiety is kind of like a modern word. I don't know, maybe it's an ancient word, but it's maybe more of a symptom of the modern age more than anything else, because it has a lot to do with people who are in their imagination. Anxiety is mostly about what's coming and what's not actually here. And I think that we're in a society that's really managed to perfect the ability of not being here very well. And so when people try to slot this anxiety in the most into the five hindrances, usually they will put it into the fourth one and say restlessness and worry as being what it is rather than regret. They're called hindrances in English. The ancient language of Buddhism, they're called nivaranas, and it literally means coverings, and that gives it a little different feeling of what they're about. Rather than something that hinders, they cover over something so we can't see what's there. And one of the interesting things they cover over, perhaps, is what motivates them, what they're a strategy to do. Sometimes these hindrances are strategies of how to deal with challenges in our lives. So we're motivated somehow to respond to strategies in not very useful ways. So, for example, some people have, anxiety, or they have loneliness, or they have sadness, or something, and it's hard to sit with. And so it's good to kind of distract oneself from that, cover it over. And sensual desire is a great way. Some people it's eating, some people it's sex, some people it's pornography, some people it's, all kinds of sensual pleasures that might come along. Alcohol, partly for the pleasure of it. And so we get pulled into that world so we don't have to face this challenge that's underneath, what's going on underneath. Sometimes there's a feeling of lack. I love the idea in English. I don't love it, but I'm struck by how the idea in English we have this word, this expression, that the soup is wanting salt. Saying the soup lacks salt or needs salt in order to taste good. So what is it that's wanting? What's the lack we have when we get pulled into the world of sensual desire? And then if there's a lack there, how do we fill it? How do we, in a healthy way, take care of the challenges we feel rather than avoiding it and comforting ourselves or something? The covering for ill will can cover frustrated desire. Ill will can cover over hurt that we have. And so rather than face the disappointment we feel or feel the hurt that we feel, someone has to be blamed. It's going to be directed either outwards or sometimes we direct it in towards ourselves. And it's not really the important issue, the ill will, but rather what it's covering, what's motivating it. Now, stupor and lethargy is interesting. I think of lethargy as being physical and stupor being mental. These are not considered the same as tiredness, but these are clearly strategies of the mind to somehow shut down, to somehow not deal with what's going on. We're so disappointed, so discouraged, so afraid, so disappointed, so uncomfortable the situation that it's better just to kind of, disappear into our tiredness, disappear into just being so lethargic or in a stupor, so we don't have to deal with it. And it's kind of a pulling away or disappearing from the experience or shutting down. So covering over the way we shut down, covering over the way we pull away from something rather than facing the challenge we have. And then restlessness and regret also can, I'm not sure exactly what it covers over. Restlessness, sometimes it's a way of kind of getting preoccupied, caught up, and spinning around, running around, so that we don't have to settle down and face what's really going on. And better to be busy and not know what we're doing, and must be able to do something. I have to clean the house, I have to shop, I have to do whatever. So that, because to sit quiet means we have to face what's difficult, and that's not nice. So it's a strategy. And regrets, regrets can sometimes be very painful to sit with, and sometimes we'd rather not sit with them, and so we get caught up in regrets, rather than dealing with the issue directly, what maybe the reconciliation has to happen. And then doubt is to be lost in thought, in indecision, wondering what to do, so that we don't have to make a decision, so that we don't have to make a commitment. Maybe there's something really important that has to happen, but we don't want to do it, or it's too frightening to do it, or we're not ready to do it. To spend our time, looking at all the different options, measuring them, weighing them, thinking about them, not deciding is a way of not facing what needs to happen. So the idea of covering over, there's one aspect of what these hindrances are. The reason to talk about it today and the reason why they're emphasized in our meditation tradition is that they're very common for people who want to meditate. And part of the task of meditators is to know these really well, is to become familiar with how they work in you. And pretty much they're guaranteed to appear sooner or later. Some people specialize in one more than the other. And that's not a person. You know, we usually say it's not a personal fault to have these hindrances. It's just kind of how the mind works. And some people's minds, you know, specialize in one or the other. But it's just kind of ways that minds deal with challenges and difficulties. Not to take it personally. However, we are to take responsibility for them in terms of turning around and looking at them and being with them and being able to figure out how they can exist, either go away and not be an issue anymore, or how these forces in us can still exist but no longer be a hindrance, no longer cover over something. So there might still be sensual desire or ill will operating, but there's such clarity of mind and that we know that's what's going on. We're not swept in it, not preoccupied or lost in it. We see what it is, and so we're really present with it. And when there's presence, that kind of presence and clear presence with the hindrances, they no longer become the hindrances, and there's no need to take them as being bad or wrong or a problem, because with that kind of clear presence, you're not going to do anything based on them. You're not going to say something in an angry way if you're feeling angry, or you're not going to, you know, do something with sensual desire that you later regret. So the idea of to really be present for them, but also to get underneath them and really see what's going on with them, and maybe become free of some of the underlying conditions and causes that are there for them. So there's five-step process that you can engage in when you're really caught in the hindrance in a strong way. Or if you're caught in a multiple hindrance attack where more than one appear at the same time. And occasionally all five appear together. It's a multiple hindrance attack. So the idea is that this is how you can, if you want to get a handle on this and a series of practices you can do that can help you become free of them. These five fit under the acronym BELLA. And I just finished teaching a retreat where we taught the hindrances and BELLA. And I was struck by how many people found it very helpful, these teachings and this practice of BELLA, that I was kind of inspired to come here and teach the same thing. So BELLA stands for these five things. Letting be, examining, lessening, letting go, and appreciating. So I'll go through those. So letting be is to not feel like you have to do something first and foremost when you see there's a hindrance. You don't have to fix it. You don't have to push it away. You don't have to blame yourself. You don't have to get frustrated. Just let it be there. But letting it be is not the same thing as continuing just as, you know, lost in it at all. It's more like, you know, if you go up in these hills here and you might run into a rattlesnake on the trail, let it be. You know, just let it be. You know, don't get too close, but don't interfere with it. Just let it be. And so when you see a hindrance and hindrance is up for you, in that way, let it be. It kind of means step back and look at it. It kind of means don't get so involved in it. And the most effective way that mindfulness practitioners have for this is to have clear recognition of this is a hindrance. This is desire for sensual pleasure. This is ill will. This is so forth. And part of the art of mindfulness is to learn how to have that kind of clear recognition of what's happening So that it's kind of equivalent to stepping back and letting whatever we're aware of be there free, it's independent, it allows it to be just the way it is, without being pulled into it. But also letting it be, not needing to feel like you need to do anything about it. Just let it be. See it clearly, let it be. It's actually, to be able to do that kind of letting be is an engagement in a certain degree of personal power. To have the power to clearly recognize and step back and not participate, not to continually participate in whatever the hindrance might be. Get swept up in it or preoccupied in it. And just simply to have the idea that you have the practice of clearly recognizing is assuming a degree of personal efficacy, personal power. I can know this, and I can clearly know it, as opposed to just letting it kind of take over and preoccupy me over and over again. And so letting be is not a passive thing. It's not indulging in it. It's a powerful thing to do. And it's a respectful thing to do because it respects the power, the underlying, kind of respect these hindrances. They represent something very deep inside of us. And if we're going to examine them, it really helps if we first let it be. Let it be itself so we can see it on its own terms, not through the filter of our preferences and our judgments of it. So we practice letting it be, and one of the best ways of doing that is to have clear mindfulness, clear recognition. And then the second practice of Bella is to examine. And this means to begin looking at it more carefully, studying it. It doesn't necessarily mean to analyze it, but first and foremost in the mindfulness tradition, it means to really examine how is this experience of the hindrance, what's this experience like for me here and now? In the immediacy of this moment, what it's like. So if there's a lot of desire, what's the energy of desire like? What parts of the body get activated with energy and are reaching forward or wanting or churning or something? When there's ill will, what's the energy of ill will? How does that course through our body? The anger or the hostility? And what's the energy? A physical energy. What are the sensations? What happens in your muscles? What gets tense? What gets tight? What gets heavy? What goes on? Lethargy and stupor. What does that feel like energetically? Probably very little. But what does that feel, this dullness? And what does that feel like here? So we examine the actual feeling, the experience, the sensations connected to these things. This is a very effective way of continuing to learn how to leave it alone, just let it be, but also to give a chance for some deeper process to unfold and to reveal itself, what's really going on. That can't be revealed if we spend too much time analyzing the stories connected to it. And you know, going into the past, figuring out why, what's wrong with me, or doing free psychoanalysis on ourselves. So we can examine what actually is going on here and now. As we learn to let things be and to examine how it is in the moment here, in the direct experience, that's where, in the cracks of the experience, we might begin to see what's motivating it. What are the underlying conditions that are prompting us to have this hindrance? What's the feeling of insecurity? What's the feeling of sadness? What's the feeling of hurt that might be there? What's the feeling of fear that might prompt us to prompt lethargy and stupor? The next thing of Bella is to lessen. And what this means is lessen the intensity of it. Sometimes people think that if they have a strong hindrance attack, that the only options is to either there's either an on button or an off button. And so you either kind of like turn it off and not have it, or you just kind of merrily go along with it. But sometimes these hindrances can be quite strong, and sometimes they're devastating. People do all kinds of horrible things when they're really strong. and later hopefully regret what they did. But the but to reduce the energy of them, diminish it so that we're not caught in its grip so much. A good way to do that is to want to lessen it, and then to relax. And why I say it's good to just want to lessen it, as soon as we step back, all the different ways we step away from these hindrances and see them as something we're in relationship to and we're practicing with, like now I'm going to try to lessen it, we've actually pulled the energy, the fuel that keeps us going in them. It's another part of our power to step back and look, what can I do here about it? And to assume that, find that place of efficacy and that place of agency. I'm going to try to figure out what to do with this. I'm going to lessen it. So relax the body. Some of these come with physical tension. And so can you soften the belly? Soften the shoulders, the chest, the face? Take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Sometimes breathing deeply and relaxing can break somehow the spell and begin lessening the power of these things. If you're not in meditation, go for a walk. Sometimes exercise. Sometimes eating. Sometimes drinking some appropriate water or something. Non-alcoholic thing. Sometimes if it's really strong, maybe talking with a friend. And just talking it out a little bit. And just that can lessen some of the energy. Journal about it. Do something that's nice. Do something that distracts you just enough from the preoccupation that it begins to lessen. And once it has lessened enough, then go back and explore it more so you can get more deeply into it and understand what's going on. So it'll lessen the intensity of the hindrance. The fourth letter, the practice, the second L, is to let go. And letting go is only possible if it's not so intense. So that's why it's helpful to lessen it. But then also, if you can't just let go, once you're kind of convinced it's not useful for you or it's not effective for you, you're not going to get a lot of benefits from this, maybe there's some way of letting go of the story, letting go of the concern, letting go of that kind of anger, ill will, that kind of desire. It's a little bit harder to let go, just directly let go of lethargy and stupor or restlessness and regret. But maybe there's something we can let go of there. Maybe we let go of the resistance. Maybe we let go of the avoidance that these might involve. And then the last of the hindrances of this bella is appreciation. And this is actually a very important part of it. And this is to recognize when we're not caught in the hindrance anymore. Especially if the hindrance has been really bad and really uncomfortable to be really caught up in something. To appreciate that it's not there and appreciate the goodness or appreciate how it feels good not to have it there. To appreciate the freedom that's there, the clarity that's there, how we're back to ourselves maybe. Appreciate now, I'm back home, I'm with myself. I'm no longer kind of lost in this world of preoccupation and that I was involved in. And the appreciation is important because when we start valuing what it's like to be alive without those kinds of preoccupations, then, we'll probably want to be there more often. We like it there, it's good there. Sometimes these hindrances offer promise and benefits. And that part of the reason people get lost in the hindrances is they see it as beneficial sometimes. So sensual desire, fantasies of sensual desire can be intensely pleasurable. And, can be involved delusions of grandeur. And it's great to be a grand person and important in the world. And so, our sense of, the conceit gets built up and it feels great and we're puffed up and it's wonderful. And ill will sometimes has a lot of energy in it and has a lot of power in it. And some people really value the power of hostility and anger. And there also they can feel they have a sense of efficacy. They have agency. Like, I'm just going to blast everyone else out the water. I'm going to you know, I'm an important person, I have important opinions, and I can express my important opinions about how everybody else is screwed. And that's, you know, so we get a certain kind of benefit. But those benefits are not healthy. And so if we do the appreciation piece and really appreciate the goodness of what it's like to be free of that, and start cultivating that healthy sense of goodness, well-being that might come, then we probably might want to be there more often. And we have a contrast for when we're in the hindrances, that I know something else. I know another way of being. I suspect there are some people who don't know another way of being. Some people are caught up in hindrances most of the time, and that's what they know. But to really have a high-quality experience of being at peace, being present, being centered, and feeling the goodness of it is nourishing and is something that is desirable, and more desirable, hopefully, than the hindrances. Five hindrances and the five practices of Bella. Letting it be, examining, lessening, letting go, and appreciating. So now it's your turn. For those of you who might once in a while be visited by a hindrance, if you have any questions or comments or testimonials about working with these hindrances, anything, you're welcome to. Is there a mic in the corner there that can be passed forward?
I was really inspired the first time I read that the Buddha's wife, I think it was, when she accepted the Buddha's teaching, all her hindrances dropped away. Do I have that story right? Oh, sorry. Is that better? I was really inspired by a story I read that when the Buddha's wife accepted Buddha's teachings, that all her hindrances dropped away, all the fetters. Do I have that story right?
I hope so.
Okay. All right. Anyway, it never occurred to me before then that I could live life without ill will towards others or self. So that was really powerful for me.
Mm.
But I can't get down with the idea of dropping all sensual pleasure.
Oh, the issue is not dropping sensual pleasures, but it's dropping the preoccupation with sensual pleasures.
Got
preoccupation with the desire for sensual pleasures.
Okay, so I still get to enjoy.
You can't avoid sensual pleasures.
Pardon?
You can't avoid sensual pleasures. It comes with, you know, you walk outside in a sunny day and it feels nice, right? It's pleasurable. It's a sensual pleasure. So there's plenty of sensual pleasures that come free and easy and are part of life. It's the preoccupation with sensual desire that is the place where it becomes a hindrance. Remember, what we're talking about here is the hindrances when these states are hindering us, when they're problematic. We're not talking about these things, you know, when they're unproblematic. So if you have unproblematic sensual desire, maybe it's no problem.
But then what about regret? Because that's a path towards learning.
Yes, I agree completely. And I think it's appropriate to have regrets if we've done something to cause harm to other people. And but it can be a preoccupation. And so people get caught up in as a preoccupation and don't do anything, and don't address the issue, don't try to reconcile themselves, don't try to learn and change for the better. They're just kind of lost in kind of wallowing in their regret. And that then it becomes a hindrance.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for this talk. It's just on time for me because I have a lot of, you know, hindrance. About different things, you know, like picking and choosing. There's always something better somewhere there, you know, and all these problems. So maybe, you know, simple example, you know, and for it just is very simple. Yeah, buying a pair of shoes, I go to a shop and, oh, I see nice shoes. I like them. But, you know, maybe in another shop there are better shoes, which more suit me. So, you know, I'm very often caught in something, I like them, but maybe there's something better. Maybe I should wait. And, you know, and sometimes I postpone decisions, you know, very long because I feel, oh, maybe there's something better there, something better there. And I don't buy things. So in some way, I lose a lot of time. I don't have a good shoes, you know.
So is that driven by fear?
Yes, yeah, some kind of fear that I can lose something, you know, there's something better. I'm not doing, you know, the most optimal choices with my money, for example. Yeah.
Yeah. So then that indecision is covering over fear, and so the important thing to then look at and study is your fear.
Fear. So how to go with this? You know, like this appreciation, letting go, the steps through this. You know, for example, this buying shoes.
Yeah. You go. So you'd go and you'd buy the most practical and accessible shoe that's available. And then you would walk out in the store and say, "Well, that was easy. Now I'm free, and I'm nice. I have the whole day to kind of go walk in my new shoes, and this feels so good to have just made a decision so quickly. And wow, I have my whole day to myself now.
It's not easy to do.
Oh yeah. but maybe." Some of your indecision and trying to get the very best thing is itself not worth it. Not worth the cost of the best shoe.
Very often. Very often.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
So as usual, I feel like you've been watching me. So I actually have been dealing with an interpersonal situation that's been frustrating me, and I felt like I was trying to communicate it, but it wasn't really going anywhere. So I've been going to my usual hindrance of ill will, which is in my head. I'm like fighting the person, and that always distresses me a lot because I don't see myself as a mean person. Then to hear that, it just caused me a lot of distress. Yesterday, I decided that I was just going to let it be, and I was actually going to watch what happened. And it all just kind of lifted. And then I did appreciate that. And then this morning I woke up and I immediately went to ill will. And I was like, how could this be? Nothing even happened over there. And I've moved away from that. But what you said that was really helpful was about the power and efficacy. And I was thinking that must be what it is that I'm seeking when I go to that place, is that I feel powerless and I feel like I'm not efficacious in the situation. And that's my way. And I think that will be helpful for me kind of going forward to remind
myself. Very good. So maybe having some power and efficacy is important, of course. So maybe it's a way of tapping into it in a different way rather than going into the ill will. Great, thank you.
So my question is, for me and for a number of people I know, there's a lot of fear that can be underlying some of these hindrances that I experience, right? And so my question, Gil, is... to do away with the hindrances and then get down and then experience the fear, that's really hard for me because fear is fear and it's scary. And so any suggestions? I mean, it's a big topic.
So I think Bella could work for fear as well. So you might start discovering how you can let it be. But fear is difficult to let be if it's really strong. Some people find it helpful to back away. And imagine that you're looking at it from the hilltop, you know, up on skyline, looking down. And maybe then it's safe enough to look at it and be with it if you're really far removed. Or the edges of the fear. Or it might be that some people are afraid of the fear, and it's a secondary fear that needs attention. And unless that's dealt with, we can't really get to the fear. So you can start looking at the fear, studying it in different ways. Also, this lessening is important. So when the fear is too difficult to really get even close to, we get like falling into falling into an abyss or something. Then you might consider figuring out ways to lessen it. And you know, sometimes, it's like things I listed before. You could exercise, you could talk to a friend, you could journal, you could try to do something that kind of reduces the intensity of it until it's at a level of intensity you're willing to touch. And then how we touch fears is variable. Some people feel like they have to just kind of either face it 100% or not, you know, not at all, and just kind of go into the darkest side of it. But instead of that, sometimes it's useful to just very lightly touch the edges of it and pull back. Just touch it briefly and pull back. Sometimes I've suggested people imagine that their awareness is like a soft cotton balls. And just take that soft cotton ball of awareness and just touch the fear. Just long enough to feel it and know it's there. And then when it gets too much, as soon as it gets close to being too much, pull away. And look around, open your eyes, you know, do something else. And this kind of brief, intermittent kind of looking at it can give us a better sense of the territory, what's going on. And we do it in small dosages. And something can begin to shift and change, and our relationship can change. And for one thing, we can get more confidence around it because we know we can pull away. Okay, any more?
Gil, you actually mentioned this in the beginning. Regret is a lot about the past, but anxieties seem to all be about the future or some vague notion of what could go wrong. And I very much identified with that question. Underlying source always seems to be some degree of fear or lack of control about what would occur. But certainly Bella seems to have some aspects of being able to mitigate that. But it's sort of recurring. And so are there any thoughts you have in terms of these are thoughts that just occur about your children, about your work, about things that you know ultimately you neither have any control over nor are the fears necessarily justified, but actually stopping them or even being very aware of the fact that when they occur, you can't get carried away with them is very, very difficult.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I don't know why I'm thinking this as you're talking. So maybe maybe it's appropriate, and maybe you'll figure out how to make it appropriate. But the go for a walk and walk in the most stately, royal way you could ever walk, with tremendous walk with confidence. You've been walking for a while, right?
Right? 50 years.
So assume all the confidence you have about how you know how to walk and really walk in a stately, confident, clear way and really walk, just completely walk. And if you do that really strongly and well, you're going to be a powerful person. And there might be, and all these little things you're worried about will feel a little bit not so big.
Thank you.
And so maybe that's relevant for you. Try walking.
I'll give it a try.
Good. So I'll end with a little story, a little kind of teaching thing that I like. And it has to do with, it could be used for the hindrances. How we view the hindrances is important. If we make them really big and are horrified that we have them, and this is a personal failing of the greatest magnitude, and this having a hindrance says really bad things about who you are as a person, you're just going to be crushed under the weight of them. But if you see yourself as being big, and the hindrances are just little, of course they're there, but... So if a big fly lands on an ant, it's a big deal for the ant. If the fly lands on an elephant, it's no deal for the elephant, no impact. Would you rather go through the world like an ant or like an elephant? So be an elephant and let the hindrances be the little fly. Don't take them so seriously. and don't let them be in charge. You can be in charge. Okay? Elephants.